Hello, and welcome to Sherlock, from Adler to Amberley. An attempt to analyse all 56 of the Sherlock Holmes short stories by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, in order. Starting with the first story, A Scandal in Bohemia, featuring the celebrated adventuress Irene Adler, and finishing with the final story of the casebook of Sherlock Holmes, The Retired Colourman, where Holmes and Watson accept the case from Mr. Josiah Amberley. Hence, from Adler to Amberley. My name is Carl Kopak, and I'll be presenting this irregular series along with a special guest as we attempt to assess the value of each tale of the canon. Welcome to Sherlock from Adler to Amberley. There's a very different start this week, and it's going to be a different start from now on. John, what I've decided to do is not do the recap anymore. I went to the people on Blue Sky and said, do you need a recap? And some people said, well, we quite like the recap. But a lot of them said, well, I know the story already. I don't really need a 7-minute introduction to me going, So I've decided not to do that anymore. Gives more time to the guest as well. So I'll do the what one person said, which I quite like. Just do the very, very smallest introduction you can to it. So we're going to be talking about the second stain, by which we mean it's the one about the carpet.
I need a recap.
You need a recap. Oh God. Okay.
I've read it.
Sorry. You've read this one. Okay. Actually, this is the story I probably know least, but I'll get into that. Now we were going to have Bonnie McBird on the show for a third time on the show, but she can't make it. She's got a bit of a family emergency, so we've asked Trevor Bonds to come in. Good evening, Trevor.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, you are there. that would have been a very, very short show had we done that. How are things going with you since we last talked about Henry Wood and mongooses? And I'm breaking the law by coming through India with a mongoose. That sounds weird if you weren't listening to the previous show.
We now need a recap of the previous show, I think. Not bad. Moved flats, only one street parallel, so can't claim it was too difficult, but still a bit. West Ham gone down the toilet.
Yes, they have.
Not too bad. I think I probably would. I think last time you introduced me as, amongst other things, a tour guide. I'm probably now qualifying as a lapsed tour guide these days.
Okay.
Someone for a while, but all good.
Okay, and we're changing the. This is your third appearance, and to say that you've been through either end of quality through the canon is something of an understatement, because you started off with the Red-Headed League, absolute classic, and then the next one you did was the Crooked Man. So I'm keen to hear your views on the second stain, brackets, the one about the carpet, which is what this is. Well, the opening question should be the best one. Do you like the second stain?
A bit like you, I didn't really recall it when you first mentioned it. But having gone back to it, I get the feeling this isn't the prevailing opinion. I do really like it. I really enjoyed it for reasons
we'll get into.
But it's certainly better than The Crooked Man. I mean, I didn't feel the need to, you know, produce a binder full of mongoose facts to fill the time.
You are going to be producing some information about Axminsters and how they soak up bloodstains and things like that, which would be ideal if you could do that. The reason I don't know it so well is, I came to Sherlock, as I've said in every show, I came to Sherlock quite late, and I came through it through the BBC Radio 4 adaptations. And because the final problem was it was a longer episode. It was on both sides of the cassette. It means they had to drop a story and then re-release it on its own, or not on its own, but with another one rather than, so they're basically, they'd be four together normally. So this was two together, and then the double was the final problem. So the second stain, from what I can remember, didn't come out until quite later after, or maybe I just didn't buy it. So I remember buying it and thinking, playing it on my Walkman, ironically around Trafalgar Square, because that version starts off with Big Ben, where Eduardo Lucas's house. And I remember thinking, I just don't remember this story at all. And obviously, I've read it many, many times since, and I really like the second stain. Because I think, like the other good stories, it has links elsewhere. Naval Treaty, Bruce Partington plans, the other big ones. But it's one I've really started to like a great deal. Although obviously it has problems, which I'm going to come on to. What about you, John? Where do you stand with this one? Bearing in mind you didn't know what it was 10 minutes ago.
No, this is actually, I think, my favourite of the civil servant leaves laptop on train type stories, as I classify them.
It's a bit of a change of focus, I think, this one, because we've gone from we've done the big stuff about sort of, we've done the parlor games ones, three students, things like that. And Trevor Watson describes this as his most important case. Is that overstating it a bit? And the last case as well, we should say.
Well, yeah, he's done that before, hasn't he? I think he's overselling it somewhat. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I have a feeling he makes comments like that more than once, doesn't he? It's a little bit like, you know, every Marvel film that comes out is, you know, the biggest one yet, isn't it? Or, you know, new improved Head and Shoulders now kills dandruff. Well, you told me the old one did. Want my money back.
Yeah. Gillette, the best a man can get. And that was 30 years ago.
Yeah, even better than the last one that was the best. I think it's a little bit, because it's a strange story, isn't it, in terms of importance, because it sort of potentially is most important case, isn't it? But in the end, nothing is actually different to how it was at the start. All it's a story where he maintains the status quo, and as far as everyone else knows, no crime actually took place.
Yeah.
So in a sense, it's equally, at the same time, it's important and it's completely insignificant.
Which is also, you could say the same thing about Bruce Partington, because the papers aren't lost. Nothing happens apart from, well, a murder happens, and they you know, they get the criminal, who is also in this story as well, which is quite nice. I like seeing Hugo Oberstein and was it Le Rottier? They both get a little foreshadowing in this one, which is quite nice. And also, and I said this last time, well when we did the Naval Treaty, the second stain I think is mentioned in the Naval Treaty 11 years before he wrote it.
Yeah, so let me throw something at you here. Absolutely, yeah. Obviously, that's the famous reference, isn't it? It's in Naval Treaty, which is where he... was the three that he mentioned, isn't it? It says the adventure of the second stain, the adventure of the Naval Treaty, and the adventure of the Tired Captain. I'm quite glad out of those three, the one he decided not to write was the adventure of the Tired Captain, so that sounds really dull.
He's just exhausted.
We discovered he was tired. Case solved.
How do you do it, Holmes? Well, he's asleep.
We're back to standing by the open window, aren't we, in the Crooked Man. However, did they get in, Watson? But I also found, when I was doing a bit of digging, I found a reference to it being mentioned earlier than that in The Yellow Face. So...
Really?
Yeah, so I went back, and I've actually only got, because, again, move, a lot of my books are still in storage in Richmond at the moment, but sounds grander than it is. It's not in a castle. But all I've got is my collected edition on Kindle at the moment, and in that it's definitely not mentioned in The Yellow Face in there. But I managed to find a digitized version of the yellow face, where it is mentioned, and it's mentioned in that opening paragraph where he says, I've got it written down here, I've noted some half dozen cases of the kind of which the affair of the second stain and that which I'm now about to recount the two which present the strongest features of interest, where he's talking about cases where he failed but was right in the end. In my version, and every other version I've managed to find, it doesn't say the second stain, it says the Musgrave ritual.
Okay.
So I wonder, but I haven't managed to get my hands on an alternative printed copy to check. I wonder whether that was changed after the second stain was published.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. John, could you look at the yellow face for us?
Yeah, I'm currently rifling through different copies of books. Bear with me.
It feels like he's done a bit of a George Lucas, you know?
Yeah, Greedo shot first. That's interesting.
Yeah, according to Deakin, it is mentioned in the Yellow Face. What collection is the Yellow Face in? Someone remind me quickly.
It's is it memoirs?
It's also The Return, isn't it?
Is it?
No, I don't think it's Return, because that's it's an early one, isn't it? It's after Silver Blaze.
No, it's not in Return. Memoirs, you said? Adventures, memoirs. Yellow Face.
I mean, it's a good thing we got rid of your boring intro, Carl, so we could spend more time on Man Looks Things Up in Book.
We've nerded this down to the key. Yellow Face.
Yes, not Return.
Second Stain.
Yeah,
is in there. Okay.
I have notes of some half dozen cases of the kind, of which the affair of the second stain and that which I am about to recount are the two which present the strongest features of interest. I bet you I bet you Les has got something to say about this.
I've got the wrong copy with me because it's split in two, isn't it?
I've got my clicker behind me. One second.
You've got Leslie Klinger behind you.
Pretty much.
Well, Trevor, I think this sort of thing happens because when I reread this last night on the annotated, I didn't know that halfway through the original manuscript, his wife starts writing it. Have you seen that on the annotated? At the end, after, well, basically the sort of the little bit at the end where, you know, everything's okay and the state is saved and everything. We're going to come on to Lady Hope. I'm just going to preface that up.
Second stain, here we are. Anyway,
I thought it was interesting because it suggests it had been germinating for a while, doesn't it, even as a title.
He likes that, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those ones he likes, isn't it?
Even if in classic Conan Doyle fashion, he then forgets what part of the year he set it in. But
in the Bruce Partington, he goes on about an entire side plot that doesn't actually happen in the story, doesn't he? Because he's on about the Paris police or something, and
yeah.
Sorry, the naval treaty that it was, wasn't it? Monsieur Dubuc of the Paris police and Fritz von Waldbaum, the terrible pronunciations there, the well-known specialist of Danzig, both of whom had wasted their energies upon what proved to be side issues.
But you didn't go to France, Sherlock, because you said you didn't want to excite the police.
A lot of Sherlockians believe that there might be another case which features the second stain because of the inconsistencies.
The second stain.
Yeah, Leslie says that at the start of the annotated, yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's inconsistent with that yellow face reference is he doesn't really get anything wrong, does he?
No.
But the problem with this story says this is a case where he was wrong, but he was right in the end. And that doesn't quite track, does it?
With this one, he gets nothing wrong, but he has a massive, massive piece of luck.
Yeah.
An incredible... Literally, if Lestrade's got to go home and get his tea, then I'll tell Sherlock tomorrow about the carpet being the wrong way around. I'll tell him tomorrow. It doesn't matter. Then, well, we're at war.
Or if the presumably relatively highly trained police constable is capable of withholding 2 minutes of gentle interrogation.
Yeah.
It's also the fact as well, Lestrade, after examining the scene, comes back in and, you know, is like, oh, there's a second blood stain here. Not that the carpet has moved. It's just...
I know we're jumping all over the place now, aren't we? But the other bit I like about that
technology
segment is the idea that the police thought they'd tidy up a bit once they'd finished. I don't think that happens.
And certainly not inspect the Lestrade of the yard.
No, it might have better things to do.
He's got some marigolds. Let me just flick a hoover around there before I go back to Holmes and say, now we've locked, there is no letter that I don't know anything about anyway. I'm going to bring this, since we should try and lean towards some level of chronology, I asked Bert about this, about the second stain, and, you know, do you have any memories of it? So Sabrina Franklin plays the slightly insane Hilda Trelawney Hope in this one. So I said that was that's a great bit of... that was a great bit of casting. I thought she was really good. But he makes a really good point about Mrs. Hudson's great line in this. So he said, he doesn't mind me reading this. So, hi, Carl. Thanks for the message. In truth, I have virtually no memory of writing the second stain or doing the recording sessions. I had to reread the script, see if anything came back to me, and I'm afraid that very little did. I do recall, though, being quietly pleased with this exchange. Holmes had just looked out of the window to see who's rang the doorbell. Holmes, played enough carriage. No illustrious clients to excite your readers this time, I'm afraid. Watson chuckles, a knock at the door. Come in. The door opens. Holmes, Mrs. Hudson, who do you have for us this fine morning? Mrs. Hudson, the Prime Minister and the Foreign Secretary, gentlemen. He says, I always liked it when I could give Joan Matheson, our long-serving Mrs. Hudson, a moment to shine, even if that moment was just a fleeting one. I was very happy with the cast. I should say Sabrina Frank was a lovely choice on the part of the director, Enid Williams, and she worked very well opposite Jeremy Clyde as her husband. And there wasn't a weak link anywhere. It is a great guest. I mean, they've been there before, and there's always the hint that, you know, the big wigs have been there before, but you know, it's as entrances go, I think it's a really nice start to the story. I think it's a dramatic start anyway, because he says it's the last one I'm ever going to write. Being here before, to be honest, John.
Until the spiritualism starts costing too much money.
Exactly. Sir Arthur had enough money at this point to thought, no, we're going to kill him again. I can't be having it.
Retire him to bee farming.
Can we all agree that bee farming is not a thing?
You can't farm bees.
It means beekeeping, doesn't it?
Yes.
I've never heard bee farming. Has anybody?
Yeah.
I'm looking it up.
But I do like the start, though, just because, and it's obviously not as, you know, portentous as the final problem is. This is the last time we'll pick up my pen to write about the life of my friend. I don't think it is his most important case, because his last bow is pretty strong.
Sorry, gentlemen, but I think the Bee Farmers Association, who are the voice of professional beekeeping in the UK, would disagree with you.
But when were they formed? Then we have to get into what year it's set in. No, let's not go there. How many wives?
No. You don't even know what decade it's set in.
Well, we thought we do, don't we? But, yeah.
I think we guess, you know.
Well, that's the other thing he forgets, isn't it? So, yeah, unless we do go down the how many Mrs. Watson's rabbit hole, if we assume he's talking about Mary, then I think he also forgets that he's told us previously, hasn't he? It's, you know, the July which immediately succeeded my marriage in the naval treaty. And then when he finally writes it, it goes in a year and even a decade which will remain nameless. I think you'll find that's called the 1880s, Watson.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyone think that Mrs. Watson might have been a bit disappointed by him saying that the July that immediately succeeded his marriage was made memorable by three cases of interest? She might have hoped that it was memorable for other reasons. Maybe.
I mean, at this point, she probably just rolls her eyes at you know, this type of thing. But she'd be dead at this point, wouldn't she?
Well, therein lies the tale.
When does she die?
Mary, she dies during the Great Hiatus.
Yeah.
I personally think this is post. I think this is post.
I've always felt it is,
because he seems to be back at 221B, doesn't he? So yeah.
It
wasn't made memorable by his wife dying. It's not helping him. This isn't better, John.
I think it's 1895, because every single case is always 18 bloody 95.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that is true. But can I also come back to the fact that it's probably not his most important case? Well, it depends when he's talking, I suppose. Because his last pal seemed to be quite important too, I thought.
He prevents World War One, effectively, from happening now in 1890s. Because this, you know, because that's what they say is going to happen.
Okay, let me be contrary here.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of talk about that, right? And a lot of the dates I've seen people speculating have been sort of between 1884, 1889. I'd like to come down on 1888, because of course I would. But if we are around there, bearing in mind, if we're presuming that Watson is supposed to be writing this around the time it's published, yeah? So he's writing in around 1903, 1904.
Yeah. It's 1904 this year.
And he says that the time is now right, or ripe, I think he says, doesn't he? You know, I couldn't publish this before because of all the conflict and the complications and the conflagrations that it could cause. But the time's right now to talk about it, which suggests to me that it's tensions that have now died down. Yeah. And I'm not sure that in 1903, 1904, if he's talking about potential conflict in Europe, I'm not sure anyone would be writing, well, that's not a problem. That's not a problem anymore.
I mean, yeah, it's all fine, yeah.
You've got the you know, the Entente Cordiale, not long after. You've got the whole, you know, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Ottoman Empire is falling apart. I don't think it is a World War One thing. I know it's tempting. It's like a, you know, if you're doing a Netflix series about World War One, you know, you'd have the scene before the credits with Kaiser Wilhelm playing in the gardens of Buckingham Palace, and you go, oh, this looks like it's not going to end well, because you know how it's going to finish. But I don't think he'd be writing in 1903, 1904 about European politics that could cause a conflict in Europe as the time's now right to talk about this. That doesn't fit. I think it's got to be something that he felt had been resolved. So to me, I think it's conflict between European countries. I think it's Africa. I think this is all scramble for Africa stuff. And I think it's post the Berlin Conference. All that now seems to have died down. That makes more sense. I don't think, I've seen people saying, oh, it's 1888, it's because of the year of the three emperors in Germany. And
yeah.
I just think that doesn't scan for me.
So are we in agreement, though, that the potentate is the Kaiser? Are we in agreement with that, or?
If it's the bill.
Yeah. It's either the Kaiser or the Tsar, isn't it?
Yeah, it's what Leslie says, and I think it's very interesting. Sort of, you know, he's a bit of a hothead, and you know, in the story at least, the potentate who writes the letter regrets writing it. Which I don't quite understand how you can regret writing it, because it's not as if you've emailed it and pressed send. I'm fairly sure you can get that letter back quite quickly, bearing in mind you're the Kaiser. I think it probably is the Kaiser. I think he's the main candidate anyway.
Yeah. What does this letter say?
Sorry,
Trev, you go on.
No, I was just saying that could still fit. I can't claim to have come up with this myself. I've seen it referenced in a couple of places, but there was apparently a sort of indelicate letter that was written in the early 1880s between the Kaiser. Well, it'd have to be late 1880s if it's that Kaiser, but a Kaiser and the Prime Minister of South Africa, when we were fighting over gold mines with the Germans in South Africa, saying, you know, essentially, good thing you gave those Brits a bloody good showing. So that could be a potential inspiration that still keeps the Kaiser on the table, or a Kaiser at least.
But isn't Trelawney Home Secretary or Foreign Secretary? He's Foreign Secretary.
He's Secretary of European Affairs.
Yeah, which means
is Foreign Secretary, isn't it?
It's, yeah.
And the PM's Gladstone, isn't he? But that doesn't help too.
The PM's undoubtedly Gladstone, yeah. I'm wondering if it's... I'm Wikipediaing the various figures in Europe, but I am wondering from the dates if it's the Tsar. You know,
that's 13 years before it kicked off.
It's a bit, it's what, Carl, sorry,
13 years, it's 13 years before it gets a bit hot for him.
Yeah, but still. There's the 1905
Russian Revolution when it all kicked off.
When it all kicked off, yeah.
Yeah, there's the 1905 revolution as well, which would be, you know, but you know, he came to the throne in 1894, didn't he? So if this is 1895, as I strongly believe, is it? Yeah, you know, but yeah, I think the key thing is, well, what does this letter say? And if there's such a damaging, you know, possibility of war, which Britain seems to want to avoid at all time, why didn't they just destroy it?
Yeah.
Well, not only just not destroy it, but keep looking at it.
And showing it to cabinet.
Like, we've all done this, haven't we? You've got something and you think, I absolutely cannot forget my passport when I go to the airport tomorrow.
Yeah, and I'll just have to check the pocket again.
Exactly. And when do you lose it? You lose it when you open your bag to check that it's there again.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was dressing and I know it was there because I opened the box and had a look at it. Stop opening the box. This is the most explosive letter in Europe. Just leave it be. Stop increasing the opportunity of it falling out.
Stop carrying it about as well. Put it in the locked safe in one of the most secure buildings in the country.
But he's only got two servants, and they've been with him a long time, John.
Yeah, the Foreign Secretary's only got two. Yeah. There's also, for me, I find Lady Hilda the most fascinating character in this, and also the worst written. In as much as... So she's aware of an international spy who's blackmailing her. She's married to the Foreign Secretary. She could quite rightly say, and I'm going to say that Black Ops isn't a part of this. Do you know that bloke over there, that spy? You might want to get him killed, you know, because he could basically, he could haul us the whole country over the coals because of something in my past that you don't need to know about. But can we just keep an eye on him, please? And also about the three, about Lucas, Dorothier and Oberstein, Sherlock knows that they're spies
and knows where they live, and they're fine with that.
Yes. I do like the, sorry, obviously a couple of you referenced before, but when it's all written out like that, I do like the what feels like a very deliberate attempt at sort of covering all the ethnic bases. It's like you've got the French one, the Jewish one, and the sort of randomly Mediterranean one.
Yeah. Yes.
It's a thing in espionage, though, that you generally just leave the enemy's spies alone, and there's an unspoken rule that they leave your spies alone.
But if she knows that he is a spy and...
Yeah, I mean Holmes.
Yeah.
You know, with Holmes, yeah. You know, the British government's fully aware. Because, you know, Holmes knows from Mycroft, let's be honest. You know, but there's these three agents in London, you know, living, acting as go-betweens and stuff like that. But they kind of leave them be because the British government's got their own agents in other countries and stuff like that. So, you know, if you target...
Yeah, you'd rather know...
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
The spies you know about are not the ones you've got to worry about, are they?
Exactly, yeah, you know. Yeah.
You'd rather know or they replace them with someone that you don't yet know where they live.
Yeah, exactly, you know. It's,
Coincidentally, I'm reading a book about John Stonehouse at the moment, who is the Labour MP in the 50s, 60s and 70s, who famously faked his own death in a Reggie Perrin type way. Reggie Perrin was based on his life, almost. So basically he left his... he was a spy for the old Czechoslovakia, left his clothes on the beach, swam down half a mile, and then spent some time in an abandoned hotel, and then changed his name and ran off. So I'm sort of involved in this sort of thing at the moment. He was basically, it explains how the Czechs got to him before the Prague Spring of 68 and things like that. And it doesn't seem to be a great deal of... he's giving loads of talks at the Czech embassy, who is obviously fairly communist at this point, and therefore, you know, evil to the 60s. And I think that's what made me think that, you know, they're very, very keen to that the government don't know that they're spies, they're just embassy officials. Whereas what they don't have is a private detective with an A to Z who can say, let's go around there now and know exactly where he is. And I know one of them is near a tube, for example. I know that for a fact, because that's where he puts his bodies. So that's in my head about that. That's just my own little personal theory. I find that quite strange. But can we talk about the scene? And we're jumping around, obviously. Can we talk about my favourite scene? What is Lady Hilda Trelawney Hope hoping to achieve by basically going around to 221B Baker Street and saying, lads, is there any way you can break a state secret for me, but I can't tell you why?
Yeah.
It's bold, isn't it?
I mean, if there's one word to describe that, it would be bold. Yeah. Nothing's don't get suspicious about this. No, nothing. No, just what did he tell you? And also if she says, I know something deplorable's happened, then it might involve a letter. How do you know that? He's not said that.
I mean, it's not Sir Arthur wanting to introduce the character, but not quite knowing how, is it? You know, it's. And then again, you know, I've always had success in the past when I've had them follow someone. You know, in the Speckled Band and stuff like that.
Band, yeah.
I think I'll do it again. You know, but you know, with someone.
Mysterio Lodge.
Yeah, exactly. You know, but with someone who's just not very good at it.
But her entire defence seems to be, yes, but I'm pretty. Which in fact does work with...
50% of the audience is
Yeah. I thought that bit was a bit odd. No? Are we all happy with that?
There's not much detection to it, is there?
No.
Let's just wait till someone turns up and gives us the next piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, exactly. What do you do about this, Holmes? I imagine his wife will be here in a minute. I'm guessing. His wife? Yeah, let's get it up.
And I said at the start, I like it. And I do like it. And I think in general, there's a nice, there's a lot to it. You know, there's a lot of, it's almost got a sort of three act structure, hasn't it? And it's all, it goes yeah. around locations nicely. And there's some bits of the sort of exposition that I think are done really nicely. The really long, purely dialogue scene, isn't there, with Hope and let's just call him Gladstone. But there are a couple of jerky bits, aren't there? And that's one of them. And the other one is the newspaper report.
They always are, though, aren't they?
Have you ever read, and, you know, I'm not
putting
modern spin on this, the three people of us on this call have all read our fair share of Victorian newspapers.
Yep.
Have you ever read a newspaper report that goes into that level of detail about how many servants there are, where they sleep? Like, it's the perfect, here's the whole case, Holmes.
Yeah, he does this a lot, though, does old Sir Arthur. Newspaper report is complete exposition dump of everything.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it is.
I think it's the same in like Silver Blaze, isn't it? And stuff like that. And yeah. It's like...
The newspaper report is written exactly the way he would write the dialogue if that was Lestrade came in
yeah.
and recounted the case to him. It's written exactly the same.
That's what it is. You see, the newspaper report is actually based on Lestrade's police report. They just handed it to him, you know, and...
Well, press release.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a press release from Lestrade.
Good job we didn't tell him about the carpet. Because he loves the carpet idea. Yeah, it's a bit of an odd thing. And sorry, going back to Lady Hilda again. Sorry, this is my E-Day fix about her. Obviously, I mean, I sort of tie this in with Watson Watch. The good doctor's in love with her immediately.
Of course.
She's absolutely immediately. Yeah, exactly.
Further honours the modest apartment, doesn't she? By her mere appearance.
Yeah. Yeah, the loveliest woman in London. Yeah, not the brightest, I'm going to say.
Which I think is a further proof, you know, he's obviously between marriages. He's having a bit of a dry spell, isn't he, you know?
I think he even he would struggle if he was going to try the old Watson charms with the foreign secretary's wife.
Yeah,
I think there might be a small bit of scandal there.
Yeah, poor John, though. He has a pretty face, just smiles at him, and he's smitten by it. You know, it's been so long, you know.
Yeah, innocent Holmes, straight away. No problem at all. Yeah, leave her alone. She's absolutely fine. We must do everything for her. I find that question. The Radio 4 adaptation, there's a few changes in it. There's a lot of talk about Lucas's valet, who is obviously stealing from Eduardo Lucas. He still stole a hairbrush. That's really put in as a MacGuffin on this. And it starts, in fact, Lucas is in it. The opening scene is him basically blackmailing the Trelawney. It's actually the maid to get information about him. So they sort of change that around. I know, John, you watched the Brett version. I've never seen the Brett version of this. Is it massively different?
It's pretty much by the books. There's just a couple of little, you know, funny comedy scenes, you know, to lighten things up a bit and stuff. The scene where they go to, you know, examine the room and stuff like that. It's half played for laughs, they try and play it for tension. But Jeremy Brett leaping onto the floor, ripping the carpet about, and yep. desperately crawling across the floor, trying to get his fingernails in gaps and stuff with tense music. It just looks ridiculous. They try and do it for tension, but then he's back up and they put the carpet there, and he's just sitting there all nonchalant while they
interrogate. It's sort of now what's now, isn't it? And then they're all on the floor, and then the next Lestrade comes back and he's like nonchalantly leaning against the mantelpiece, pretending to yawn, isn't it?
It's
a lovely image. That's one of the things I like about this. It's sometimes there's really good bits of really economical writing where there's just a couple of sentences and you picture the whole thing, and it's hilarious. I think that's a comedy scene in the story.
It's on the they got Jeremy Brett. It is like Is it described how big this carpet is in the in the story at all? I can't remember.
Well, it doesn't take it long to move it, so I don't think it's that. And also,
the Jeremy Brett version, it's like the size of. It's like the size of, you know, most people's kitchens, this carpet is. It's absolutely right. Massive. He's desperately scrabbling across this massive bit of floor. There's a random table in the middle of the carpet as well, which they've got to check out the way. And then when they put everything back, Holmes is just kind of sitting on the table with his legs crossed, looking all...
Wasn't me, Doctor, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And then when they... It's one thing I don't like, though, is at the end, after they, you know, find it, you know, oh, darling, isn't it wonderful? I know you can't possibly understand the importance of this. And then Gladstone's there and he's like, Mr. Holmes, I think there's more to this, you know, and they leave the house. Holmes does like a little excited leap in the air and skip in celebration. I'm not quite sure that's very Holmes, but, you know, interesting, interesting interpretation, Jeremy, you know.
There's another change actually in the Radio 4 version, which I've just realised, and it makes me think that there wasn't enough drama in it for Bert. So she actually says the letter is still in the dispatch box, and of course he hasn't got a key. But in the story, she's got a duplicate key, obviously. But in the Radio 4 version, she hasn't. So Holmes has to pick it. He's got 7 minutes for the. You know, before Gladstone and Trelawney Hope come back, and they do it that way, and it's like, you know, you've only got 1 minute, and you know, and he's trying to pick it, and there, and you know, he finds it then.
That's another change with the ITV Granada version.
Oh, really? They do that too.
Well, they don't do picking it. She doesn't have a key, so Holmes has to kind of use sleight of hand to plant it, while Hope's there going for the documents. Holmes has got to kind of, you know, now you see me type thing.
Okay.
Look out there, a mongoose, where? Sorry, wrong story, but just have a look in the box again.
Well, also, what about Watson in this story? Is it another classic Watson watch where he basically...
I mean, that is most oblivious, isn't he?
He falls in love obviously, immediately. I'm trying to think if he does anything. No, I don't think he does a thing.
He acts as a lookout in the Brett version when the guard's out, you know, interrogating the constable. I can't remember if that's the same in the short story.
I think in the story he's doing the digging in the floor, isn't he? He's doing that with Holmes, isn't he? Because Holmes goes, now Watson, now, doesn't he? And I did think when I was reading that bit, if I was Watson, I'd be wondering, now what? I think when time's of the essence and clear instructions, Sherlock might come in useful.
Yeah. It's not really a classic Watson much.
While we're on,
again,
we're on Watson.
Yep.
And rewinding a little bit to the fairer sex being his specialist subject or whatever Holmes says.
Yep, three continents.
Throw in a quick smut watch.
Ooh.
this might just be me, but did anyone else spot not long after he's been waxing lyrical about Hilda? Anyone notice he describes the house as being narrow chested? What's on your mind, John?
And that certainly wasn't the case with Mrs. Hope. He failed to add. Dear me. Dear me.
I like Lestrade in that scene as well. When he comes back in with the constable and he's like...
Oh, that's great.
You should
have
known
you couldn't receive
me or something.
Yeah,
I love that. I absolutely love that.
Yeah,
it's classic Lestrade, isn't it?
I like the way it's hinted at in it's hinted at in the story, but they really go to town and not on the Radio 4 version, because he says, just one glance at that carpet and I knew that something had changed. Just one glance. And then this lovely bit where Holmes just says, Constable McPherson, a word. And then it just ends like that. It's going to go, by the way, he didn't spot a thing, and I'm just going to let you know what happened. And then he goes back with Hilda again, who does the old, no, no, I don't know what you're talking about. There is no letter. Not got a clue. And yeah, yes, there is. We all know what's going on. I'm still not convinced about why she would be blackmailed in the first place, to be honest.
But they're not comparable, are they, the two letters? The consequences of the two letters being discovered are not of equal weight, are they?
No, not at all, no. Yeah, because she just said, you know what, I was young and this happened. All right, fair enough. I mean, there's obviously links with Milverton here, which is pretty much the same thing. When I read it the first time, I did think, hang on, she's just... Well, if Lucas is dead, she's probably killed him because that's what happened in Milverton. So it's just basically a rewrite of that scene, really. Except the one thing we haven't actually discussed is the actual title of the story. I've never really understood how they can lift the carpet up and put it back in the wrong place.
I could...
Well, it's hair, isn't it? But
yeah, I can understand if it's like a... This is because I can understand if it's like a round carpet. That would be.
I think it is carpet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
As
I
thought of that, yeah. As it's what we would call a rug, isn't it?
It's a rug. Yeah. It's a rug. Yeah. Yeah. It's a rug, and then there's like a parquet floor. I'd call it underneath.
Yeah.
And I can understand if it's like a round carpet because you've got less points of reference. Yeah. But if it's like a full on. Yeah. Square carpet, which is what the Granada version has, and it takes up like three quarters of the room. It's a lot, harder to do, you'd think.
And presumably it's not like a straight square room. It's fairly oblong, like most rooms are. Presumably. So, the long bit goes down the long bit and the corners go into the corners.
No, in the Granada version, the carpet's perfectly square.
Right.
Yeah, it's absolutely massive. The room is absolutely massive. Because I just imagine it's like a carpet in the middle of like a sitting room floor type thing. But it's absolutely massive. It's and it goes to the drama though of Holmes trying to desperately scrabbling to find the the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it is good, but once again we've absolutely ripped it to pieces.
With love,
I do enjoy it. Do you think it's a worthy ending of the collection? It's your big ending. It's your big last track of side two.
I do actually. I think again
it is the most important one of the 12 or 8.
As discussed, but no, I think there are. As you say, we always end up, do it being a bit critical of the clunky bits, but I think there are some nice flourishes in there.
Yeah.
In terms of the writing, that comedy, so the economy of that comedy scene, the dialogue, I think I get the sense Conan Doyle enjoyed writing it.
Yeah.
Which you don't always get with this era of stories. So in that sense, I think it's worthy ending, because I think it's like he's actually, because he knows this time maybe he will escape and then go back writing his Grenadier books. I think he's enjoying himself. I think you can feel that it's fun. He's having fun writing it, and I like that.
Yeah. But it's weird to think then it starts. This does start off at the empty house, doesn't it? I'm fairly sure it does.
Yeah.
God, that was, how long ago was that when we did the empty house with Bert? Oh, God, I've moved house. I've been in his house 3 years since we did that. God, that was only 12 stories ago.
Yeah, we're not very speedy about these, are we?
No, and we should have really apologised to the listener for that. We were on the ball with this one, we really were, but we had some guest issues. This is the end of was it Memoirs or Return? I've got Return.
Return.
The next one is his last bow, where there's only eight. There's only eight stories on his last bow, and of course he wrote it a lot long afterwards.
Is it eight?
Yeah.
Have we done the cardboard box already?
Oh, we have, yeah. Sorry, yeah. It's actually seven.
Yeah.
The Twisteria Lodge, Red Circle, Bruce Partington, great story ever written. Dan Detective.
Mm-hmm. I love Dan Detective.
I know you do. That's good because you're the guest. Well, just above to share this with the listener. So Wisteria, we've got Janice back for Janice Wilson's doing Wisteria Lodge. Red Circle is your friend, whose name I can't pronounce. Is it Ian? It's his birthday today, I think.
Oh, Johan.
Johan, okay. good job of checking that. Bruce Partington, of course.
You couldn't pronounce Ian there for a minute.
Yeah, it's Ian with an O in the middle of it. Bruce Partington was going to be Nick Utek, and obviously, who is now Bert. Someone called Reese is doing Dying Detective. Chantelle's, who did Engineer's Thumb, is coming back to do Lady Frances Carfax. Although surely she's too famous now, Chantelle. Devil's Foot is Leslie Quinn, and Mark Jones is coming back to do his last bow. So this one is only going to be seven this series. So we could get that done in just 4 years, John. There's every chance that could happen.
Before we wrap up, can we just go right back to the beginning, where in his little introductory bit, Watson, where he's talking about the bee farming, which yep. I apologise to the bee farming association.
It's furious with you, Trevor. It's furious with you.
Uninformed speculation. And he's saying the reason, as well as saying that the time's right, he says that he's finally got Holmes's consent to publish the story, doesn't he? Does anyone imagine Watson sort of every other weekend going down to interrupt the poor man while he's doing his bee farming and going, Holmes, and eventually he goes, fine, just publish the blooming thing.
Swatting bees away from his face.
He's just like, Holmes. Oh, come on, Gladstone's dead now. Trelawney hopes, you know, I don't know, resigned from government. Can we just publish it?
Come on,
I need to get a lusty description of Hilda Hope down, Holmes. I need to relive the
No
moment.
One's going to spot it. I'm so proud of myself. I'm comparing it to a room and a house. What more do you want?
We didn't have a little Barbara Windsor moment either, did we? Our officer, do let me have a peep.
Yeah.
I mean, that's straight Oh,
carry, come on.
Have on, Governor.
Go on, officer. I was only a little girl.
I've now got images of Barbara Windsor in Study in Terror.
That's exactly the image I had as well.
Oh. There's also a little bit of discussion that should be made about the fact that her entire story is done on feminine wiles, despite being pretending to be somebody else. So she's come to the wrong house to do the wrong job, and she's just said, can I come in and see where the man was killed? And he's gone, yeah, okay. Because, mind you, Watson, same thing, because you're pretty. Actually, one thing we haven't discussed about the fact is the fact that the only reason this has all happened is just luck. I know I mentioned it briefly at the start, but what happens if Lestrade says, nah, I won't bother telling him. It's just a bit silly. Someone's moved the gallop. It's a bit odd. To say it's his most important story, it's surely his luckiest one too.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit back to Empty House in a sense, isn't it? In that you've got
and Norwood Builder as well.
Great moments that either just fall into his lap or happen off stage, you know.
Yeah,
like the Empty House with Henry Wood, isn't it? It's, you know, tell me your story. No, I won't. But then he did tell him the story, and then the case was solved.
The best one we've had recently is when Neil Atkinson came on to talk about the six Napoleons. He talks about Beppo just being really unlucky because if he smashes the first Napoleon and it's in it, there's no story.
Yeah, the one Napoleon.
It's the fact it's the last one.
It's always the same, though, isn't it? You know, you're trying to find somewhere, so it always look last place you look. I assume that if Lestrade hadn't, oh, Mr. Holmes, you know, it's funny business, whatever, that Holmes would have found another way. Perhaps Holmes would disguise himself as a pretty young girl, chatted up the constable to get him inside the house, possibly promising marriage. It seems like a Holmesian thing to do.
True, yeah, but he'd have to get past Watson in the same room.
I was going to say, as long as Watson doesn't see him first, yeah. We're getting dangerously close to birthing some new fan fiction here.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's probably already been done.
It probably already has.
Martin Freeman in a wig.
Yeah.
Oh, Mr. Holmes. Stop looking about.
Oh, another thing also about carpets. I keep mine very nice.
What's happened?
And as for the second stain, I think we should just
draw it. Oh, you might just do it.
Come on. This is what the people want. We
apologise.
Sorry about that. I do genuinely apologise about that. We were talking about, we were having a chat last night about this, the three of us. We were talking about the modern reference would be the equivalent of Boris Johnson taking Matt Hancock into 221B and talking about missing WhatsApp messages. And then basically just saying, it's okay, Mrs. Hancock, and you can have a quick word with your wife. No, that wouldn't work because he had an affair, didn't he, during the COVID thing. Sorry, we're getting into politics here. No, people don't like that. But it's just the equivalent of Keir Starmer and Angela Rayner to T21B Baker Street and hoping Watson doesn't fall in love with one.
I like it. Let's mention one from two from each side. Clever, Carl. Clever.
Yes.
That's
called BBC balance.
Yes, there we go.
You know, you've got to have two Tories, two Labour, and Nigel Farage.
And Nigel Farage, yeah.
In my head, that version ends with Matt needs to present his WhatsApp message, the inquiry, but he seems to have lost it. Can you help him find it, Holmes? And at the end, it's well, Matt, it turns out it was in the drawer all along. Isn't that a happy ending? And the last scene is Matt Hancock's face, and you just see that he's thinking, maybe not for me.
And also, for some reason, I think that Matt Hancock would be like the Dick Emery, the Roy Kinnear character with Dick Emery. Do you remember the Dick Emery character and where they just wore overalls? Come on, Dad! That would be for me. That's exactly what Matt Hancock would look. Angela Rayner as well for balance.
I genuinely feel sorry for Matt Hancock. I've got to say, never ever has a man been so over promoted beyond his ability and talent, and then purely kept in position during one of the greatest crises the country's ever known, just to act as a scapegoat when it all goes tits up.
It did get to the point where you could see it in his face, couldn't you? You could see that he knew, I'm not very good at this.
Yeah.
He didn't think he should be in charge by the end of it. How do we try and drag us back from recent politics? But
right.
We all read that scene with with Trelawney Hope and the Prime Minister? Because I think it was you when we were chatting before, Carl, that was saying you think he's sort of quite unbothered by the whole thing, quite supportive, and that's not quite how
No one can blame you, my dear chap. He says,
He does say that.
Yeah,
he does say that.
It's very different, isn't it, to the naval treaty, the reaction there, the naval treaty to it. It's
it's felt like,
this is your head, isn't it? It's oh dear, oh well, what a promising career.
Before he does the no one can blame you, the line immediately before that, where he's saying that Hope saying, isn't he, he's probably on his way to one of the great chancellors of Europe, and then looks really distraught at the thought. And then the Prime Minister, the exact line is, well, it's your misfortune, no one can blame you. I'm not sure. Yeah. If I was playing that, I'm not playing that as reassuring. It sounds a little
bit
like,
possibly not, though. No.
Well, I mean, yes, you probably are going to get sacked.
Yeah,
it's not your fault, old chap. Don't worry about it. you know, you have, you know, you, it is inoperable. but it's a lovely day.
You've got to remember.
Bits of that are you going to remember?
You've got to remember as well, but I imagine the whole thing of ministerial responsibility was actually a thing in those days when it is it? You know, nowadays a minister cocks up. They don't resign for it, do they? So
I think he's got a level of shame, hasn't he, Trelawney Hope? Which is,
yeah.
Yeah, he's genuinely devastated.
I just love this image though of where at one point he's just there talking and he has this fit of despair and he just kind of starts wrenching at his own hair. It's so melodramatic. Yeah. And then all of a sudden the aristocratic mask falls again. And he's just because chap, you know, it's like
he's a cocky little so-and-so though, isn't he? That might be partly why I like to imagine that the PM's putting him down a bit, because I think it's just before that where he's saying about, oh, no, I haven't even told my wife about the letter. And the Prime Minister says, you know, I always knew you had a high sense of duty or whatever it is. And his response is, you do me no more than justice, sir. You know, I acknowledge your praise, which I fully deserve.
Being cocky, who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. Aw, poor TH. Can I give you my Gladstone fact? Because I'm always banging on about the Brett version of the Red Headed League where they go to the concert and it's my school that was filmed in. Bearing in mind, I was at that school at the time, so they must have done it on a Sunday and no one knew about it. Gladstone was born in Rodney Street in Liverpool, which is the street next to my school. And if in fifth year, if you were late, you had to fill in a Gladstone, which means you had to copy out an essay about his life. So people in my class knew an awful lot about Gladstone by the time we left school. There you go. That's my Gladstone fact. I don't think he went to my school. I think he was just born around the corner. Rodney Street is where all the doctors had their practices. It's the Harley Street of Liverpool, pretty much.
Surely after you've written the essay once, though, it's a bit less of a chore, isn't it?
We still got to write it out.
Before the days of.
I mean, fair in mind, he was Prime Minister like what, four or five times? Will be around for a few months. Maybe you start with the first premiership and then the second time you have to do the second one. And then you have to try and find 2,000 words on the one that lasted about 3 months.
You could put some opposition stuff in there, couldn't you? You know.
Balance.
You know, some people are more effective and useful in opposition, such as the current Prime Minister. But, you know, it's...
Balance, John.
Effective or just slightly less useless?
Useless. Keir Starmer just reminds me of kind of like season one Bartlett in The West Wing. If he was even more cowardly and ineffectual than Bartlett was in season one of The West Wing. He's yet to have his let Bartlett be Bartlett moment.
And the fact that he refuses to tell CJ about massive recruit movement in Kashmir, which as the press secretary probably is quite important that she knows that.
Yeah.
That's his most cowardly thing, I think, in season one.
Maybe this should be the new scale for Watson Watch. Rather than just Watson Watch, we'll expand it and it'll be, did Watson achieve more in this story than Keir Starmer did in the time since we recorded the last episode?
True. I think he's more constant. Watson, to be honest.
Let me throw a... you see, but you do not observe, Keir. Let me throw a very boring, I'm sure... typographical query at you that I spotted in that dialogue scene where we were talking at the start, weren't we, about who's the letter from. The other part of that is we also don't know who it was written to, do we? And there's that bit where he says it's addressed, I can't remember if it's the Prime Minister or Hope, I think it's Hope, says it's addressed in large bold handwriting to, and there's an ellipsis. Do we think that's him to indicate him just trailing off? Or is that Watson redacting something?
I thought it was redacted. I've just read, and I've read it before, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And they do that with the year all the way through it. In 18 dash.
Yes.
And just leave it like that. If we're not telling you.
Do you know, if it is a redaction, do you know who I'm leaning towards?
CJ Craig?
No.
No, okay. I'll be honest, that was a long shot.
I'm leaning towards member of the royal family.
Well, if it was the Kaiser, there's a fair chance they were related.
Well, yeah. His grandmother, possibly.
Yeah. And is the Tsar related to the Saxe Coburg?
They were all related. Yes.
Yeah, they were, yeah.
Princess Alexandra, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Of course, yeah.
God, we're gonna have to do this all again with the illustrious client. Where Holmes, where the Sir James, what's his name, says that please don't trace my client back through me. I know you can do that, but on a point of honor, don't do it. And Holmes does it anyway, obviously, because he's him. So we've got all that to come with that. I don't know. Well, that's
the illustrious client. I can't remember it.
Sorry to jump in. I was just going to say, I think we should acknowledge, and it's probably one of my favourite things about it, might be why I like it. I think it's one of my favourite sarcastic Holmes moments as well. It's just come to mind looking back at my notes for that bit. Where he says, as interesting and indeed essential as these details are, I think that's a wonderful line.
I like that he also dismisses them.
Yes. Yes,
which is a great bit. I love it when he
does
that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's like, I think wasting each other's times, guys. Unless you tell me what's happening.
Yeah. Thank you for your interesting email.
Yeah, I've also found that a bit of it. We said, John, when we did the Six Napoleons with Neil, that it's, and because, well, we're quoting Leslie, it's not us, that it's Lestrade's last story, but he's in this one. Leslie said it's his last ever story.
What, Six Napoleons, Lestrade?
Yeah. No, it's not.
Unless it's...
chronologically, maybe.
Yeah, chronologically. If Six Napoleons can be, you know, identified. I'm sure Lestrade appears in a later one.
Apparently not. That was his last one. Plus, also, I've got to say, I do like the word potentate.
No, Lestrade's in much later ones.
Is he?
He's in Bruce Partington, he's in Francis Carfax, and he's in the Three Garadebs.
Oh, God. Isn't he also in... Oh, no, that's probably the Radio 4 version. I think he might be in... I always thought he was in Retired Colourman. Maybe not.
No, it's not showing you...
Oh, I think Leslie might have got that wrong. Sorry, Leslie.
I've in preparation for this episode, you're going to be shocked to hear, Carl, I looked up where it ranks in Sir Arthur's list.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, this is how we all tend to show. Yeah.
It's high, isn't it?
What do we think?
Top 10. It's top 10, I'm sure. It's like number 6 or something.
It is top 10, yes. So Sir Arthur, of course, did two lists. One was a top 12, and then there was an additional, what was the second list?
19. He had another 7, yeah.
He had, it was number 7?
I think he had a 7.
Yeah. So this is in the top 12. So where do we think in the top 12? It ranks.
I would say 5.
I'm going to 6.
It's number 8.
Not bad.
Yeah. Very high. I think it's the highest ranking we've had for a while.
Yeah, because we've had good ones and none of them have been in it.
Yeah.
It seems almost harsh. Oh, it's quite nice to have a good one that's actually made the list.
But so I've liked.
Yeah. Is that the same with the second list as well?
What do you mean?
Is that so? Does he keep the original 12 and just add 7?
Yeah. He adds an extra, however many of it is.
He doesn't say it in with a bullet, four bridge or anything like that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we're ending on a high note. For once, a good story has made his best ever and made both lists as well, which is quite nice. Nice to see. Brilliant. Well, I think we should leave the carpet one there. Trevor, thanks very much for coming in again. I think the second... Yeah, you, no, must, have come, you must have been a... You must have been a surprise guest for the... for the crooked man, because there's absolutely no way that you would have volunteered for it otherwise.
I look forward to the next time, 3 years and five stories later, when you have another guest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Start reading Wisteria Lodge, it's the next one. Have a good Christmas.
Yeah.
So our next one, John, is Wisteria Lodge with Janice Wilson. It's the end. It's the final end of Return. We've nearly finished. Just to finish on this, actually, about plans we've got after this. I know we talk about this all the time as well. So we've got two more collections to go. His Last Bow and the wonderfully sketchy casebook. It's quite bad, but it does have Thorbridge in it, which is marvellous. We're probably going to be doing the novels after that. And then we did talk about doing the Burt's extra stories, and Bert said that he'd like to come on for at least one of those. I'd like them to be on for all of them, to be honest, but so I think we should have him on for the Abbey of Any Murder.
I mean, I think, you know, we are being a bit ambitious here.
Yeah. Oh god, this is 15 years ago, but you know, the novels alone are gonna...
At this rate, I'm going to be retired by the time we finish this. And I'm 20 years younger than you, so you know.
Yes, true. Yes, yeah, yeah. You better get a move on. All right, I'm gonna message Janice.
We want to get really, really ambitious. What about we do the play?
Oh,
I'll come back for that.
Gillette.
Well, we are talking about doing for the Master on Stone of doing a group discussion. In the old Rippercast days where there's 27 people on it and they go on for 4 hours. So we could, you'll definitely be invited for that one. You want to talk about the worst, if you want to talk about the worst Sherlock Holmes story ever. But it's Wisteria Lodge one, which, and if everyone wants a plot recap for the Wisteria Lodge one, it's the one about the Spaniards. I think I've just given away the ending. So, brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Trevor. Yep.
Oh, Wisteria Lodge is just one in two parts, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I never understood that.
Mr. John Scott Eccles.
Yeah, and then the Tiger of something.
The Tiger of San Padre or something, yeah.
Cool.
So, we're now shot. Right. I'm going to go and eat something. So thank you very much, Trevor, again.
Thanks, gents.
And I will. Right, John, I'll talk to you about another 4 months or so before we do the next one.
Ta-da. Good night.
Thanks, everyone. Bye now.
I would like to thank our hosts at Rippercast, as well as producers Jonathan Mengus and John Rees. A special thank you too to Andrew Firth, who created both the graphics and the theme music. You can contact us on Twitter at Adler to Amberley. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.